Yes, that's now working. Okay. Thanks a lot, Volker. Right, so I'm delighted to be here again at Samba XP. It's also great to see so many people here interested in Samba development and using Samba. This is the third conference we've had here, and I think they've been a great place to meet the developers and for the developers to meet users and to meet potential new developers. So hopefully out of this conference we'll get some new developers, some people in the audience who are interested in doing some work on Samba and can assist the team in the future. But what I'm going to be talking about here today is Samba version 4. Now, we've only just released Samba version 3 a few months ago, and some people occasionally ask me, you know, why do we have Samba 4 so soon after Samba version 3? Well, for me, Samba version 3 is ancient history. Samba version 3 became ancient history probably about 18 months ago. And this has been the pattern throughout the development of Samba. I've tended to be working a little bit on the next generation versions of Samba, so a year or two out. So when people were still trying to get Samba 2.2 out the door, I was starting to work on features towards Samba 3, similarly with Samba 2 and Samba 1, etc. So what I'm trying to give you here is a bit of a look into the future of what Samba might be like in a year or so's time. A year, 2 years, we don't really know. It depends how many other people pitch in to help. We could get Samba 4 done in 6 months if everyone in the room left their jobs and came to help. But I suspect that isn't going to happen, so it might take a little bit longer than that. Now, this time last year, I gave a talk about Samba version 4 and what was going to go in it. When I started writing the talk was originally titled A New VFS Layer for Samba. And the idea was to just rewrite a very small portion of Samba 3. And that was about, a bit over a year ago, a year and a half ago, about that time. Then after I'd written the talk, the work started to evolve and the plan started to evolve until we decided to call the new effort Samba version 4, which in fact is the largest rewrite of Samba yet. It's the most comprehensive change to Samba that we've ever had, and I believe it's going to really give an extremely good basis for the future development of Samba and for Samba in the user community. So I thought I'd start off by giving a bit of a demo. So what I've got here, this is a Windows 2000 server that I'm running here, and running on my local laptop under VMware. And my presentation here is being presented with PowerPoint. Now, usually you'd think that somebody like myself wouldn't use PowerPoint, but in fact, if we look under the hood here, this is PowerPoint. It's the Swedish version of PowerPoint, but who cares? It's the same thing. And why am I presenting this with PowerPoint? It's because this is acting as a demonstration of Samba version 4. Now, some people tell me that they're not interested in looking at Samba 4 because it's too far off, it doesn't work yet, they're not interested in helping to develop it until after it's finished, which doesn't work, by the way. You've got to sort of start the development before you finish the code. But anyway, so I thought I'd give a demo here of Samba version 4. So what I've got is a Windows 2000 machine here, which is connecting to my laptop running Samba version 4. And you can see here a share data on blue, H:, that's the Samba version 4 server. And that's all fine. You can see that with Samba 3. Anyone can do exactly like this with Samba 3. But there's a couple of features that are available here that aren't available in Samba 3. And in particular, there's some features that are quite difficult to add properly to Samba 3. Now, I'll just point out one of them. If I hover the mouse here over one of these files like that, then you can see what's happening here. Those of you up the front can see it anyway. Those of you up the back, you know, continue sleeping. There's nothing to see here. So those of you up the front can see that, in fact, it has brought up the stream information, the additional information about the file. And it says, in fact, this file is stored on the Samba 4 server and has additional file streams that hold, among other things, this comment. And it's got a title, etc. Now, I can go in there and edit those. So go to the properties and you can see this summary tab and you can see all this information about this summary tab. Now, it's a fairly minor feature, but it's one that I believe will be extremely important for the future. File streams, this is stored in an additional stream on a file. So in a file system in the Unix world, you have a file name, like a file name called foo.txt, and that contains some data. And the data is indexed starting at 0, 0 for the first byte, then byte 1, then byte 2, then byte 3. That's how Unix files work. In the NT world, it's a little different. Each file can have any number of what's called streams. So a file might have 10 streams on it, each of which has a name and can contain arbitrary amounts of data. Now, file streams weren't available in old FAT file systems. They're something that came in with the NTFS file system. But, and so because they're a relatively new thing in the Microsoft world, not many applications take advantage of them yet. But some do. And one is this Microsoft Explorer, when you can add arbitrary comments to a file, and those comments are stored in file streams along with the file, so you have the primary data and the additional streams. Now, in Samba 3, adding streams properly is relatively difficult because of the way the code is structured. It's possible, but it's not particularly clean. One of the aims of Samba version 4 is to provide a clean structure to allow us to fully support these additional file system attributes, such as streams and full NT-ACLs, those types of attributes, which are normally not easily representable in a POSIX system. And so the aim is to have a much, much more complete implementation of the protocol that really does dot every I and cross every T, implements every field of every request. And you might, with some backends, deny some of those fields. You might say that with a particular file system, you don't want to store streams. But if you have a file system that can store streams, for example, then we want Samba to be able to take advantage of that. And in Samba 3, even if your file system could support streams, you can't take advantage of it. Okay, so that's a quick demo. One other demonstration I'll show you here is Samba 4 as a proxy. Now, this is another share that I have connected here, and I've called this share MSDN on blue. Now, this is an unusual share in that the Windows 2000 client is connecting to the Samba 4 server, which is using a different backend. Samba can have multiple pluggable backends, and this backend is a backend that goes and stores the file data on a remote SIFS server, on another Windows file server or Samba file server. So Samba version 4, this share is a proxy share where Samba 4 is proxying for a client to access another server. And in this particular case, the other server that is accessing is in fact the client that is coming in. So the Windows client is connecting to Samba version 4, which is connecting back to the Windows client and is displaying its own directory tree via Samba version 4. You might think that's just bizarre. Why would you want to do that? But in fact, for debugging and development purposes, this is fantastically useful. Being able to have a back end for our file server that stores on a Microsoft file server allows us to isolate problems into either the back end or the front end of the code. Because the back end, when it's using in this proxy mode, is a perfect back end if you consider Microsoft file serving to be a perfect implementation of the protocol. So it has all the bugs, all the behavior of the Microsoft server, which allows, it's fantastically useful when developing the core code of Samba 4 and working out new features of the protocol to be able to proxy requests to another file server while still having the request going through all of the protocol layers, the full request structure inside the Samba 4 server. Now, there might also be some uses that some of the more perverse people in the audience think of for this. Maybe, in fact, there are uses in production for a full SIFS proxy like this. That's up to you. For me, it's a development tool. So just leaving if I head back here to a open office running on Linux where I'm a bit more comfortable, leaving Windows to one side, I'll get on with the main features of my talk. So let's look at the features of Samba version 4. The goals of Samba 4 are really quite ambitious, but they are achievable, and in fact, many parts of Samba version 4 are already complete, and in fact, quite a few parts are a lot more complete than Samba 3 is. So it's really come along quite a way in the last year. The major features we're aiming for is protocol completeness. So we used to try to guess which protocol elements to implement. Instead of guessing, we are just going to do all of them. Extreme testability. I'll talk more about that in a minute. The ability to test the protocol down to a very fine-grained level. Non-POSIX backends, such as those file streams that don't exist in POSIX, being able to support those if you are using a file system that has the ability to store those additional non-POSIX attributes. Fully asynchronous internals. Inside Samba version 4, the operations are asynchronous so that you can have multiple outstanding requests to the server, you can have blocking requests while another request is going on at the same time from the same client. This is vitally important for some applications of Samba. In particular, Windows Terminal Server utilizes asynchronous calls a great deal. Samba 3 responds to those in a synchronous fashion. That hurts performance in a very big way. In Samba 4, we can solve that performance problem. A flexible process model. If you're familiar with Samba at the moment, you'll know that it has a one connection, one process model for the core server. So each client that connects gets a single process. In Samba 4, we have alternatives. Auto-generated RPC. We're generating a lot of the code in Samba 4. Rather than having to write the code by hand, we have a compiler that takes a description language called IDL and generates much of the core or all of the RPC code and some other code as well. And a flexible database architecture. This is like the next generation of the TDB database that's in Samba 3, but much, much more powerful and flexible than that database, and that gives a number of new features. Now, I'd like to mention here a proposal that I put up about a week or so ago on the Samba technical mailing list. And this proposal is to create a Samba version 3.5. The version number is still under some dispute, but I'll call it 3.5 for the purpose of this talk. So the idea is this is a halfway house to Samba version 4. Samba 4 has a lot of very good code in it. It has a lot of code that is much more complete than the Samba 3 code, and much cleaner and easier to understand. Instead of waiting for Samba 4 to be finished in all aspects, ready for end users to use it, the proposal is to extract the finished pieces of code where possible, the easily separable code from Samba 4 now, and create a new version of Samba, Samba 3.5, that incorporates pieces of the Samba 4 technology that are already finished, along with the core infrastructure of Samba 3. The idea, from my point of view, is to get more developers working on the Samba 4 structures, the way of doing things, while at the same time bringing out a new release which has significant advantages for the user community. For example, we might be able to support being a backup domain controller by taking advantage of the new RPC code in Samba 4, which we don't have in Samba 3 and is quite a difficult task to generate. It might be easier just to adopt the Samba 4 RPC system where that subsystem is already complete. So you'll notice the two icons down the bottom, Samba 4.0 and Samba 3.5. In the rest of the talk, when you see the Samba 4 icon, that means that the feature I'm talking about is only going to be in Samba 4. The Samba 3.5 icon means that the feature is slated for the Samba 3.5 release. It's something we're planning on getting into Samba 3.5. If it's in the 3.5, it will also be in Samba 4. So I just put the one icon. Okay, so So this first example, you can see the little icon. That means that we're talking about stuff that's going in SAMBA 3.5. The basic pieces we're planning on merging into SAMBA 3.5 from SAMBA 4 is the new SMB client library. We have a much more complete, much more comprehensive client library in the SAMBA 4 tree that's been developed over the last year. And it's really better in basically every respect than the SAMBA 3 client library. So the idea is to import that back into SAMBA 3. Now that's a piece of base technology that the other pieces depend upon, because the rest of SAMBA 4 builds on top of that library and the structures and interfaces that it uses. The next part we want to import is the IDL-based RPC client library. That's to replace the 100,000 odd lines of RPC code from SAMBA 3 with about 5,000 lines of IDL. And that IDL is much easier to read, much easier to modify, easier to understand, and that IDL is automatically turned into the C code for the RPC client library and for the server-side stubs using a IDL compiler. We've got a new IDL compiler called Piddle, a Perl-based IDL compiler that takes our IDL and generates the necessary code. The LDB database is it's like halfway between a Berkeley database and an LDAP database. So it has the simplicity of usage of a Berkeley DB or a TDB database, but it has the sophistication of interface and the API of an LDAP database. It's also able to store data in a real LDAP database or to store data into a local database. That LDB will provide the core storage mechanism for metadata in SAMBA version 4, and I hope that it will be used for a number of the databases in SAMBA version 3.5, although not as many as it will be used in for SAMBA version 4. I'll talk more about LDB a bit later. The new SMB client code, building on top of the SMB client library, has some new features. We'll be importing that. The new SMB torture test suite. The goal in SAMBA 4 is extreme testability, and towards that goal, Jim Myers and myself spent several months writing a really comprehensive test suite for the SIFS protocol, extremely comprehensive. And that test suite is absolutely vital to producing good releases of SAMBA in the future, so we'll be importing that test suite back to SAMBA 3.5 to make it easier for developers to do a very fine-grained level of testing. The secure channel code, the S-channel code in SAMBA 3 was a first implementation where we were still discovering how secure channel works. In SAMBA version 4, it's a much cleaner new implementation. We'll be pulling that across to the SAMBA 3.5 tree. And finally, some of the source directory structure, sorry for the typo, the SAMBA 4 directory structure is cleaner and easier to understand, thanks to the work from Stefan Metzemeyer, who's here somewhere. Metz, there he is. We'll be pulling across some of that structure into the SAMBA 3.5 effort. Okay, so protocol completeness. This is one of the goals of SAMBA 4. The SIFS SMB protocol is a very big protocol, but it's not infinite. We almost viewed it as being infinite in previous releases of SAMBA and didn't attempt to cover all corners of the protocol. In SAMBA 4, we've got to the stage where we can now aim to cover everything, every field of every possible request that every version of Windows can generate. And that's a SAMBA 4 aim, not a SAMBA 3.5 aim. We need the new server infrastructure in SAMBA 4 to achieve that. And we're not planning on bringing across the server infrastructure into 3.5. Otherwise, there really wouldn't be a difference between 3.5 and 4. It's also the least separable part of the SAMBA 4 effort. So we tended to implement protocol elements in SAMBA's version 1, 2, and 3 on demand. When somebody noticed there was a missing element in the protocol that was needed for some application, then we would add that element into SAMBA. Instead, in SAMBA version 4, we have protocol scanners that scan the protocol looking for new elements, sometimes determine the structure of the new element, and enables us to automatically determine what elements of the protocol we are missing so that we can implement them. And that makes an enormous difference in the ability to give a much more complete implementation of the protocol. So the new attitude is implement everything. Our previous testing method in SAMBA version 1.2 and to some extent version 3 was relatively ad hoc. We developed test suites for particular areas that we knew might cause problems, and then we made sure those test suites worked. That works to some extent, but doesn't really support the effort for protocol completeness. So in SAMBA version 4, we are instead using an approach of what I call extreme testability. And what I mean by that is developing a test suite which tests every field of every request. So there's an individual test that ensures that the allocation size of query file information, all EAs level, is returned correctly. And so on for all of the hundreds and hundreds of parameters of all of the different calls. We can then run that test against both a Windows 2003 server or against a SAMBA server, and we can determine what we've got wrong. We can determine what fields we are getting wrong. And in developing this test suite, we discovered quite a few things that SAMBA 3 was getting wrong. Many of those have already been corrected in the more recent releases, but there's still some ongoing work to complete that. For those of you who don't know, this protocol is not documented, not properly documented. So discovering new behaviours and new elements is quite common. But maybe I should give you a quick demo of how that test suite works. If I go into source tree, now can you read that? Is that too far away to read? Let's see if I can create a bigger font. Is that better? Okay, so if I do SMB torture and I connect to MSDN/test and if I do something like raw Q file info, this will then test all levels of query file information against the server. And in fact, it's noticing errors due to time zones. There's some problems in the test suite handling the time zone difference because my machine is still set to Australian time. And the Windows box set to Australian time, my machine's set to German time. And it's noticing that certain fields are coming back with the wrong date, wrong time stamp, from running that test suite, and so it can, it's flagging errors. But you can see down the bottom here, it's sort of finding out all the information about a file. What it does is it exploits the internal redundancy in the protocol. So there's about 10 or 12 different ways of fetching the size of a file, in the SIPS protocol. Now, usually you would consider that a disadvantage. All that redundancy means extra coding. But that redundancy for a test suite is an advantage, because what this test suite just did was it fetched that field and every other piece of information about a file using every one of the possible methods that can be used to fetch it and compared them and made sure that they all generated the same result. So it's a comprehensive test that takes advantage of the internal redundancy of the protocol to ensure that a server is being consistent. And that means that if we have a bug in some obscure part of our server where we're returning the wrong data for some field, the test suite will notice that unless we get it wrong in every place that we can return it. So if any one of the places gets it right, then the test suite will notice that there is a difference in the return value and will notice tell you what the bug is. So that's a very powerful mechanism for finding bugs. Now, so we have individual tests covering each field of each call. We also have a randomized dual server tester, which is a test tool that connects to two servers, typically a SAMBA server and a Windows server, generates randomized requests between those two servers, and you run it for hours and hours or days and days at a time, generating millions of requests, and it notes if there's any difference in behaviour between the two servers on any type of call. If there is, it does uses a backtracking algorithm to determine the minimum set of requests that generates the difference between the two servers. So that technique allows us to find differences in the behavior of a Samba server and a Windows server, or between Windows 2000 and Windows 2003, or between any two servers that support the SIFS protocol, to easily find those differences at a very fine-grained level in a completely automated fashion. And as a development tool, this is fantastically useful. So the first place that these new test suites got some coverage was at the SIFS Plugfest. Each year we have a SIFS conference held in the United States. The last couple of years it's been held in San Jose. And this is a photo of the Samba team at the last SIFS Plugfest. The Plugfest runs for about 5 or 6 days, 24 hours a day. So there's the Plugfest is open, the networking is open 24 hours a day for 5 or 6 days in a row, and people are often in there in the early hours of the morning testing. And there's typically about, say, 10 or 12 vendors who turn up, the usual suspects, you know, network appliances, EMC, Sun, Novell, IBM, all the different major vendors of SIFS products, and we test our code against each other. The standard test, the gold standard for testing over the past few years has been the Samba test suite, this comprehensive test suite, because none of the other vendors have a test suite that even comes close to what our test suite covers. So it's also quite heartening that the benchmark tool that we developed, it looks like it's going to be adopted by SPEC as the standardized benchmark tool for the SIFS protocol. The basis of all of this work on testing is something called the Raw Client Library. This is a new SMB SIFS client library that is able to generate essentially every possible SIFS request using a easy-to-program API. Primary features of it, it's asynchronous. You can have multiple outstanding requests. It includes things like oplocks, and it's dumb. Quite deliberately and quite importantly, it is dumb. It does not attempt to interpret the result of getting of a request from a server. It just parses it and gives you the raw fields back in a parsed format as a structure. And that allows a development of a test suite which is much more comprehensive than the Samba 3 client library, which tried to be smart and tried to be convenient for the programmer. But that convenience and those smarts got in the way of comprehensive testing. So one change in the way of doing things is that it's now much more verbose to program the Samba 4 client library than the Samba 3 one. What I'm showing you here, up the top here, is an open call using the old interface. That's how you opened a file. The equivalent code in the new interface is this, below. So it's much more verbose. It has far more lines of code you have to write. They're relatively simple lines of code, but there's more of them. But the point is that every field that can be set in that open request can be set as part of this call. Whereas in Samba 3, you could only generate a very, very limited subset of possible open requests because the client library tried to be smart about mapping these four parameters to all of the parameters of a full open call. In Samba 4, we expose the full details of that protocol to the programmer, and as a result, we can generate a lot more robust testing and also generate things like the SIFS on SIFS backend. That proxy backend I showed you is a direct result of the ability to be able to parse packets down to this level. It does more parameters than most of the Win32 API, yes. It provides all the details that's in the SIFS protocol. But it's similar in some ways to many sections of the Win32. If you're familiar with Win32 programming, you will find this interface quite familiar. Okay, so the SIFS backend I've already mentioned. I gave you a demo of this. Samba version 4 has the concept of pluggable backends. These backends operate using those same structures that I've just shown you in the raw client library. And one of the things that's able to be done with this is to create a back end that acts as a proxy where Samba can then talk to another remote server, it can then talk to another server and so on. And this is primarily used as a testing system, but I've already received it. One person who has a satellite-based communication system says he'll find it quite useful to be able to run a SIFS proxy via this code. So in fact, there might be some niche applications where this gets real-world deployment. GenTest, I mentioned the dual server tester, dual instance tester, which covers a very, very broad range of requests and does full asynchronous testing of things like oplocks. It's the big gun test suite I've been wanting to write for years, and we've finally got a chance to actually write it, and it's been already extremely useful. So the mechanisms it uses, dual server testing, where it connects to two servers, and I'm just running a bit low on time, so connects to two servers, generates random requests, and then it uses a backtracking technique that I describe here to analyze differences in the behavior of the two servers. And once it sees a difference, it's able to find the minimum subset of requests using a binary search. So it tries eliminating requests from the request stream until it finds the minimum set of operations against those two servers to generate a difference. Then it was able to produce a trace of those that set of requests. At that point, the programmer can have a look at that small trace. Typically what happens is you run gen test, it goes for thousands of operations, then it finds a difference between the two servers. Analyzing those thousands of operations to work out why there is a difference is basically impossible. But with the backtracking technique, it can reduce it down to a set of typically two or three operations, and it can say that this is the minimum subset of two or three operations which will generate a difference between the two servers. At that point, you can get yourself an ethereal trace of those two or three operations, and you can generally work out what the problem is. So it just reduces the debugging time for these. It finds the bug and then reduces the debugging time to fix the bug enormously. I mentioned that Samba 4 has multiple process models. In Samba version 3, we always had one client, one fork, so we would produce a new process for each connected client. Now, I still believe that is the best process model for Samba, and I still think that the vast majority of applications will continue to use the one client, one process model because it's the most efficient model on nearly all Unix systems. But there are some specialized applications of Samba that would benefit from a different process model. And so in Samba version 4, the process model has been abstracted, so it's possible to plug in different process models. And there are three standard process models that come with Samba version 4 that have already been completed. The first is the single model, this one here. That works with a single process for all clients. It never forks. It still supports as many clients as you like operating simultaneously. It still operates with all of those clients asynchronously, so it doesn't block operations on one client while the other client has got the server busy. This model is, if you were to use it in a deployment, probably the appropriate setting would be an embedded environment where memory and or process resources are very limited. Maybe you might be implementing a server inside a PDA, and you don't want to fork off hundreds of servers inside the PDA. Instead, you might want a single task that provides a comprehensive SIFS file server without having to create multiple processes. But the main reason for the single process model is, again, development. It means you can run the GDB debugger or any other source-level debugger on a single task, which greatly simplifies the interaction between Samba and the clients and Samba and the operating system. So you can set a breakpoint in that single server and you can see that breakpoint from every client that is doing an operation. So as far as development, debugging, as building infrastructure to make Samba development easier, that's a really important feature. The standard model is the Samba 3 model, which you're already familiar with. And thirdly, there is the thread model, In that case, it creates a new POSIX thread, a new P thread for each connection, and so Samba becomes a multi-threaded server. Now, there are some disadvantages of being multi-threaded. First of all, despite common the misconception that threads are fast, in fact, for file serving, threads are slow. POSIX threads are slower than processors for file serving applications. It might be faster for high-performance computing applications. It is slower for file serving. And I can show you a micro benchmark that demonstrates all the different file serving operations and which ones are faster and slower in each case. It's very clear that a fork model is faster for file serving on every operating system I've tried it on. But there are some situations where threading is advantageous. In particular, if you have a storage backend that can utilize a shared cache between threads, then using a threaded process model allows you to take advantage of that cache. So that's, in fact, why the thread model was created. IBM has such a file system, a storage area network SAN file system called Storage Tank, which can take advantage of a threaded program to share a metadata cache between the tasks, between the threads. And so by putting the thread process model into Samba 4, that gives us the ability to talk to file systems of that type. Yep. Yep. Yes, all three process models do that. Right. All three models operate asynchronously. So requests, basically, the core code parses the request and passes it to a back end. The back end then schedules the request, and when the request is completed, it tells the front end what the result was. That can happen hours later. And for, in fact, some types of requests do literally take hours or days. For example, change notify requests can take hours to return, and Samba continues to operate fully even though there's a pending request that's sat there for hours. So yes, it's asynchronous. Now, the back end has to know to be asynchronous. You have to write the back end with knowledge. When you write a back end, you can choose to write a synchronous or an asynchronous back end. The SIFS back end is fully asynchronous. The POSIX file system back end, when it is completed, I'm not sure whether it's going to be synchronous or asynchronous. That's really up to the author of that back end. Ideally, it will be asynchronous, but that's more work. It's harder to write an asynchronous back end. So the core infrastructure of Samba version 4 is asynchronous, but it allows for back ends that are synchronous, and the back end can choose on a per request basis whether it will answer a request synchronously or asynchronously. There's a programming guide that discusses the synchronous model, asynchronous model in Samba version 4. So PIDL, this is one of the big advances in Samba version 4 and is also going to 3.5. We are finally generating our RPC code, which is one of the most complex and largest parts of being a Windows file server and print server. And a fairly large proportion of all of our code in Samba version 3 is RPC code. Well over 100,000 lines of code, maybe even approaching 150,000 lines of code. Now, that code was very tediously, laboriously handwritten, and in some cases erroneously handwritten because it's so complex. It's very, very complex to get it right. Instead, in Samba version 4, we describe the interface we are trying to implement, and we run the PIDL compiler, and it generates that code with all the error checking, with all the memory allocation, with all of the necessary pieces done correctly for every routine, rather than handwriting that code. So it reduces the size of code that the programmer has to write by more than an order of magnitude. And that makes an enormous difference to the long-term maintenance of Samba. It also gives us the ability to do much more code. We can do far more interfaces, far more functions, because it doesn't take as long to work out the code and to write it, because it's just so much smaller, more compact. So I'll give you a quick look at what that looks like. So if we'd have a look at something like SAMR, the SAMR database, then you describe, if you have a look at something like this routine here, this describes a particular call. It says it returns an NT status, and it takes two parameters and returns one parameter. That would have been a couple of pages of quite complex code in SAMR version 3. In SAMR 4, you describe it like that. You describe just what you're trying to do, and the IDL compiler generates all of the appropriate code with all of the appropriate error checking, and it's just done. It also generates debugging code, validation code, and all of the ancillary code that people don't generally get around to writing. That gets automatically generated directly from that small snippet. So we now have IDL for many of our pipes, and we can generate a quite comprehensive client library as a result. That's RPC, where are we? Okay, LDB is the new database in SAMR version 4, building upon TDB, but also allowing any of the databases in SAMR that use this new interface to be stored either in a TDB or in a real LDAP database without changing any code. So you'll be able to configure SAMR to either place its SAM database in a TDB or an LDAP server. We can do that in SAMR 3, but that required that a programmer write a totally different backend between SAMR, between LDAP and TDB. And there was very tedious mechanisms for transferring data between those and error-prone mechanisms for transferring data between those two storage mediums. In SAMR 4, and I hope in partly in SAMR 3.5, we'll use this new capability to enable the administrator to selectively pick which of the portions of the SAMR metadata, such as the user database, the locking databases, the printing databases, whatever, they want to store on a LDAP server and which ones they want to store locally. It also gives sophisticated indexing mechanisms for scalability. It should scale much better than the existing database code in SAMR 3, so it should allow us to go to much larger deployments without hitting performance problems. It has an LDAP-like API. Essentially, it's a slightly simplified LDAP interface, but without requiring the installation of an LDAP server. And in fact, that was the primary motivation for writing LDB. I want SAMR version 4 to be easier to install and use than SAMR version 3. But at the same time, SAMR version 4 is much more sophisticated than SAMR version 3, so how do we make it easier to install while having a more complex system? Well, one of the mechanisms we're using is we were going to target LDAP for the back end for SAMR 3, but installing an LDAP server is hard. How many here have installed their own LDAP server? A few? How many of you enjoyed the experience? It's just not fun, and getting it right is really hard. Handling upgrades is hard. It's just really nasty dealing with the details of LDAP, largely because of the schema. Getting the schema right and getting it integrated correctly with your existing data. With LDB, you can have the LDAP API, all the power of the LDAP system, but you don't need a schema. It can operate completely without a schema. And that provides a really powerful database mechanism, which is like a halfway house between TDB and LDAP. I think it'll become an important core piece of SAMR. Active Directory and PDC, one of the aims of SAMR 4 is to be a full Active Directory domain controller and a full NT4 domain controller, including PDC, BDC, all of the extra bells and whistles. We've been attempting to do that for a while in SAMR. The problem is we didn't have the necessary infrastructure in place to make it practical to really achieve this. In SAMR version 4, a lot of effort has been put into the core infrastructure, and that infrastructure gives us much more powerful tools to achieve this goal. So I think it really will be achievable to make a full Active Directory domain controller on top of the SAMR 4 infrastructure. supporting extra character sets. I was over in Hong Kong recently looking at character set issues. Things are looking very good on that front for internationalisation. And in particular, we want to support UTF-16 as well as UCS-2. Luckily, that's not nearly as hard as we initially thought it would be. UTF-16 allows for up to 1 million code points, 1 million different characters. UCS-2 only allows for 49,000 characters. That allows us to support more languages. It doesn't affect languages like German, but it does affect languages like Chinese and Japanese. Easier install. In SAM before, I want SAM to be much easier to install and configure. I want to build a web configuration agent directly into the SMBD daemon. So you don't have to... There's a contradiction in SAMBA 3 where people who are not used to configuring SAMBA tend to find configuration via SWOT easier than configuration via the configuration file. The problem is that the most difficult thing to initially install in SAMBA is SWOT. So the very people that need the ease of configuration can't get it because they can't get SWOT to work. And so SWOT being built into SMBD so you can launch SMBD with no configuration file at all, point your browser at it, and it will have a web-based configuration system there available with hopefully a decent GUI. We want a better interface than the existing SWOT. So that's the plan, to have that built in. So where are we so far in SAMBA 4? It's taken about 3 people, roughly about 14 months so far. We've got the raw client library. We've done the test suite. The NTVFS backend system is done. The SIFS backend is done. The RPC PIDL IDL infrastructure is done. The LDB database system is done. To get this far, we had to drop a lot of functionality from SAMBA 3. That functionality needs to be added back in. So there's some fundamental things in SAMBA 3 that you can't do in SAMBA 4 right now. There's a lot of work still to do putting that back. But the core infrastructure is there. You could even use it now. I used it for my presentation today, running Microsoft PowerPoint on a SAMBA 4 drive. It does work. We just need more people to jump in and complete the remaining portions of the code. More information, get the code from Subversion, svn.samba.org. Join the Samba Technical IRC channel. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not production code yet. And you can get a copy of these slides from that URL that's up there on the screen if you're interested. Any questions? None whatsoever. How many of you are going to go and give Samba 4 a try? A few? Good. Delighted to see it. Really good. So please discuss the results of trying it on the Samba Technical mailing list or on the IRC channel. Have a go. See what it's like. Please know that it isn't complete. It's very much an incomplete system. But if in a couple of years' time or a year's time you don't like it and you didn't try it now, it's your fault. Question? Okay, the POSIX file system backend, I was demonstrating there a prototype of it. Obviously, I was storing those files on the POSIX backend, but I'll show you how it was storing that. Remember I showed you that there were those data streams, and so it stored all that extra information? You might wonder where that's stored. Prefix, data. So if I do an ls in there, you will see that the directory that looked like samba4.xsi, see this directory here with just those couple of files? In this local file system, it stores them like this. Because it's storing the streams, the file streams, the multiple forks per file as additional files. That's not very good for a backend that's also going to be used by Unix users. So we need to instead store data in extended attributes in other ways. We need to support op blocks in the POSIX backend. We need to support case preservation. The simple backend is case insensitive, but it's not case preserving at the moment. It needs to be case preserving as well as case insensitive. There's lots and lots more to do. Currently, the whole of the VFS simple backend, the whole of the POSIX backend we've got at the moment, is less than 1,000 lines of code. It's 930 lines of code. And yet, you can run NetBench against it. You can run PowerPoint and Word against it. Lots of things do work, but it's extremely simple. It's with less than 1,000 lines of code, it has to be. So it will, that back end will end up being a major portion of Samba version 4. It has to be a lot more sophisticated than it is now, but if you wait until that's completed, basically you're waiting until Samba 4 is released. Whereas if you want to get into the development and help out and give comments, you really need to jump in now. Yep, question here?
Will the streams code here work for resource and data forks for Macintoshes?
I expect we will support resource and data forks via the same mechanism as streams. There's already defined APIs in the SIFS protocol for those data forks that were added by Thursby. And previously in Samba, we just had to return an error code to those clients and say, we don't support that information. And then the client had to fake it up itself. Now, as we're adding data streams into to support Windows 2000 data streams, it would make sense to, at the same time, using the same mechanism, support Macintosh data forks and also to support, for example, OS2 extended attributes. Once we have the ability to store arbitrary metadata associated with a file, then that gives us a building block for supporting all of those additional features that you can't do in POSIX. So yes, I think we will be supporting those as well, as long as somebody implements it. The infrastructure to support those is there now. It would probably only be another 100 lines of code or so on top of that code I showed you today to add the Macintosh fork support. It's a relatively simple addition using the same mechanism. This one you can see on the screen here now, storing them as separately named files. It's a bit more work to put it in extended attributes. I think it's very worthwhile.
Yep. Can I just make a quick comment on that?
Yep.
For Apple to support the resource and data forks in their SMB client, I just finished adding to Samba 3, what will be Samba 303, the ability to get access to extended attributes stored on a Unix file system, like the Linux XFS or EXT3 extended attributes. So what I need to do is, when I get back to California, is trot around and see Conrad, who is Apple's client file system developer, and say, okay, we have somewhere for you to store the resource forks for macOS. So essentially that will probably come sooner than Samba 4, although we won't be storing it in an NT compatible, in the same way that NT stores the resource forks for macOS 10.
We can potentially make it compatible with the NT mechanisms in Samba 4. Yep.
Okay, I have a last question myself. Do you think it will be possible to do video mixing through a Samba server where you have maybe two or three video streams coming from Samba and you mix them and write them back at the same time as reading?
Why not? Why doesn't that work now?
I have a situation where it did not work.
Right. Is it the performance of it or...?
It had to do that the backend was our GPFS file system. And
right.
It does not work well with Samba, of course. But this
right.
is not a Samba problem, I guess. This is the interconnectivity problem.
Right. I'd have to look at the specifics of that to work out what's happening. But this wasn't for SBS broadcasting in Korea, was it?
No.
No, okay. I got a very similar question from them just a couple of weeks ago. Very, very similar.
It's a small word, but not that small. So
right.
Let's thank Andrew for his talk.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
So where's the blonde guy for the next talk? Yes, it's coming.